praise the Lord. It is his breath in our lungs that keeps us going here today. Amen. Hey, little midgets, wait just a second. I got something for you. Don't run away too quick just yet, because we have Easter coming up here, like really, really quickly. And so here's the thing. I've got something for parents to do, and I have something for kids to do. Now, I know you guys are excited to get back to your most amazing teachers, right? Like, you guys are really, do you guys, little people over here, do you guys enjoy your teachers? Not so much? You guys don't like your teacher? I'm sorry. Yes, they love their teachers. So here's the thing. I'm gonna get something for you guys really quick. I'm going to ask Miss Beth to come up here. I'm going to get something to you guys really quick. And then I have something for the adults that we're going to do here. So when I call your name, then here, you give me the ones that they're not here. Okay. We have St. Clair. If your name is St. Clair, come up here real quick. Little people whose last name is St. I have something. You don't push them down. Come here, Landon. All right, here's the thing. Let me explain what this is, okay? This is something that we're giving to all the families of kids here at LRBC. And listen, if you are a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, and you want to do this with your loved ones, let us know, and Bethany can put together a package for you, okay? But here's the deal. This is a bag. I'll give this to you so you can give it to him. This is a bag that is allowing you as parents to do something amazing with your kids leading up to Easter. Listen, Easter eggs. All right, now he's here. He's like, I want another one. You get one per family. All right, you little. Mommy stole it. All right, so here's the thing. Easter eggs are amazing, are they not? But Easter eggs aren't the thing that Easter is about, right? Like, it's a lot of fun to do the Easter egg hunt and all that, but that's not what it's all about. And so what we're doing as a church is we are giving you as parents, as grandparents, an opportunity to disciple your kids at home and to have an impact on your kids at home. You want to, we have a Zubler. If your last name is Zubly, Zublier? No, that's it. All right, Zubler, here you go. So this one for you, and you can go have fun. I don't think we have any other kids that are here that are worth. You guys are too good. You guys are too smart. You don't need. You guys are like there's Moses and then there's the Rittmeyers, like right there. So, all right, Rittmeyers, send us a Rittmeyer to come. Come here, little. He's scared. He's like that scary Miss Beth lady. Here you go. All right, listen. If you are a parent, okay, now kid. Uh-oh. Now kiddos, you can run back to your teacher. Well, don't run unless you want to. Go back to your teacher and have some fun. Adults, every adult here, I forgot mine. Every adult here, grab your phone real quick. Do me a favor, just grab your phone. Everybody has a phone. Everybody grab your phone and lift it up. And don't worry, you don't have a phone. Everybody, listen, I can be here all day long. Like, it don't bother me. So I'm just going to sit here and wait for everybody to grab their phones. You're pretending. I love it. It runs the sound. Nice, nice. Okay, other people I see people without phones up. Okay, there's a phone. Here's some phones. I see no phone. You're running away so you don't have to get your phone? All right. Wow. Okay, here's the thing. Here's what I want you to do. His phone has a light because you're all fancy. It's not a rock concert here. Okay, so here's the thing. I want everybody really quick. Everybody, you're holding your phone. Don't put it away. All right, we're not done with your phone yet. Don't put it away. Everyone here knows somebody that doesn't go to church, okay? I just want you to think of that person's name for just a second. Think of the person who you know. Maybe it's a family member, maybe it's a coworker, maybe it's a neighbor, whatever it is, someone that you know that doesn't go to church. And on Easter, we have some pretty cool stuff going on, just like we have every Easter. We talked about it earlier. We're going to have breakfast, we're going to have an early service, we're going to have a later service. And so it's going to be a lot of really cool stuff going on. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to use your phone because phones aren't just, you know, calculators. They're actually supposed to be used. So use your phone. And up here on the screen, we're going to have a text message, because I want you to send a text message to the person that you thought about that doesn't go to church. Okay, so here we have Landon. How about a treat? This is funny. How about I treat you to breakfast on Easter Sunday? Just send that message and see what happens. See how people respond to you. And these are just funny conversations, fun conversations. Hey, Lila, I was sitting in church and thinking about how much I would love to have you sit with me on Easter Sunday. Do you have any plans in 2 weeks? Okay, you can text. Like, your thumbs work during church. I know you guys are playing on your phones during church. I've seen you, you know, you're swiping Facebook and no, you're on the Bible. So use your phone, send a message to somebody that you know doesn't go to church and invite them to come with you. It's that easy. Here's the thing. I don't remember the exact statistics, so I'm going to make one up because most of the statistics are made up anyway. So we're going to say like 80% of people that don't go to church, I don't know if it's 80%, but I know it's a high percentage, would go to church if somebody just invited them. And so I want to encourage you to invite somebody to church on Easter Sunday. Let's have a goal. Let's fill every single chair in this room. Like, you guys, wouldn't that not be amazing if every chair, and the deacons are like, no, because that's a lot of food to feed people. But it would be amazing if every single, they can go to the store. Like, Sullivan's is open. They can get more eggs if they need to. If every chair in this room was filled up, it would be an amazing Easter Sunday for us to be able to worship and experience what God has done. On Easter Sunday, we're going to be talking about Isaac, and Isaac went under the knife. And that's what we're going to be talking about. And we're going to talk about how we can see a picture of Jesus's resurrection all the way in the Old Testament, all the way in Genesis. We can see a picture of what's to come. And so that's what we're going to talk about on Easter Sunday. And it would be really cool if your friend, if your neighbor, if your coworker, if your family, whoever it is, was sitting right next to you for Easter Sunday. And so I want to just encourage you guys, not just right now, but listen, if somebody texts you back during service, you have my permission. Have that conversation. Don't keep them waiting. Just tell them, hey, man, here's what's going on. We've got two services. We got breakfast, and the breakfast is edible. Like, you don't always get that at a big, you know, church breakfast, but here it's always edible. Okay. No powdered eggs. Like, we got the real deal. I don't know what else there is. I think there's going to be bacon, maybe sausage, pancakes, eggs, milk, coffee, orange juice, you know, all of the good, probably some fruit, I would imagine. Maybe not. I don't know. Definitely no vegetables, but it's going to be a good day. That was my one thing. They're like, would you come be pastor? I said, as long as we never have to have vegetables, then I'll come. No, that didn't happen. Beth makes me eat vegetables. Anyway, it is so good to be here this morning. And I thank you guys for being a part of Leaf River Baptist Church. Those of you that are joining us online, we love the fact that you're part of our extended spiritual family, because we really are in this place. We really are a family. Like, there's actually caring for each other going on in this place. And that's what I love. I love the fact that if somebody has surgery, for instance, then we have other people that care enough about them to, you know, take them a meal and say, hey, it was a rough day, and so we're going to help you out. We've got people that care enough to give a call or to stop by or whatever. And that's the thing with being a family. Like, that's what's exciting about being a family. And so we love the fact that we get to be here together and worship together. Now, we have had the last couple of weeks, I feel, have been somewhat intense weeks as we've talked about things that are going on in Scripture, right? 2 weeks ago, we talked about how Abraham stepped up boldly to God and begged God basically to save people, to save Sodom and Gomorrah from destruction, really to save Lot from destruction. And then last week we saw how how there weren't enough righteous people to save the whole region, but at least God did save Lot. And so we saw how God fulfilled his promise to Abraham to save Lot. But here's the thing. Today we're gonna see that this is, I don't know if you guys can imagine this, but this is huge. That Abraham saw the destruction of these cities and saw his nephew was saved, just like God promised him. But apparently Abraham forgot about that pretty quickly. And that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to see how Abraham forgot that God was remembering him, that God did remember him, meaning that God was actively fulfilling his promises to Abraham. That we're going to see how Abraham spaced out on that or maybe took it back or whatever. And it's amazing, I think, sometimes to think about that, to think about how we can know for a fact something is true, right? We can know for a fact something is true, but we can continue living as if it's not true, right? Like I can know this podium is wood, but I can pretend that it's not, even though it clearly is wood. Let me give you another example. Imagine for a second, imagine you're 17 years old again. And for some of you, that's a really long time. I know. I don't know if you can remember back that far. imagine for a second, you're 17 years old again, and you really enjoy driving, and maybe you have a problem with driving. And when I say a problem with driving, I don't mean you don't know how to drive. I mean, maybe you get in trouble while driving. I'll tip my hand here. When I was 17 years old, I got in a little bit of trouble while driving. I learned very early on, like long before I was 17, I learned that there was one particular gas pedal, or one particular pedal that made the car go really fast. And I really like going really fast. Like, that's just in me, right? Like, it's fun, it's great. I was a really good driver, right? I mean, other than the cars that I totaled. Other than that, I was a really good driver, okay? And I had just so much fun going fast. Now, here's where the problem comes in. There are these people who are fun killers. They're fun killers. I know. And you're thinking, who would want to kill? It's these people. They drive around in cars. They have these lights on their cars. They have a little badge on their shirt. And they're fun killers. And so I met a lot of those people. Sometimes I met the same one. And that was interesting. But anyway, a lot of people don't know this. Some of you do. But a lot of people don't know. If you don't pay your ticket and if you don't go to court to try to fight the ticket, you get an arrest warrant, okay? Now, growing up in Texas, I knew this. I knew this. Like, there were billboards all over the place that if you don't pay your tickets, you will be arrested. There were TV commercials about people that didn't pay their tickets and were arrested. My dad would tell me, you've got to pay your tickets or you're going to be arrested. And so when I was around 17 years old, within a period of a couple of months, I racked up a couple of tickets, totaling around $1,500. But I racked up these tickets, and I knew, here's the thing, I knew if I don't pay these tickets, I'm going to be arrested. Like, it's plain as day. Like, that's just, but here's the thing, when you're 17 years old, you kind of ignore what you know sometimes, right? And so there was one time that me and some friends, we were kind of hanging out in a field that may not have belonged to us. We were just hanging out. We were, you know, doing kid, teenager things. And suddenly we saw these red and blue lights flickering around. And we're like, uh-oh. So we go and we talk. Very nice officer. I don't remember his name. Very nice officer. And he took all of our IDs, right? And we're lined up on the side of the road. He took all of our IDs and he went to run them to make sure we were, not, you know, wanted for murder or whatever. Good thing. As he came back, he's kind of passing everybody's ID back out to them. And he mentions just kind of flippantly, he's like, you know, one of you have several warrants for your arrest right now. And I'm sitting there like, oh, you guys are busted, right? And I was oblivious to the fact he was talking to me until my arm did that. And then I knew, okay, clearly I knew that my tickets would get me in trouble, but I completely ignored what I knew was true. Now, I think we all do that, right? And here's the reality. Knowledge, right? Knowledge without action has consequences. Knowledge without action has consequences. And for me on that summer night, the consequences were a very interesting 15 or so hours going deep into Dallas County jail systems. And that was a really interesting experience for me. To you, maybe those consequences involve more than just yourself. Right? Maybe those consequences impact other people too. Listen, this morning we're going to look at Abraham's journey. We're going to continue looking at that. And I think in a lot of ways, I think a lot of us are able to resonate with Abraham's journey in various aspects, right? I think a lot of times, a lot of us are able to understand where Abraham's coming from, right? And the challenges maybe that Abraham went through and the joys that Abraham experienced and how God encouraged him and promised him things and how Abraham sometimes forgot, right? Well, today we're going to look at a passage where it's a passage. We've read this passage before. Let me just say that. We're in Genesis chapter 20. And God has encouraged Abraham ever since Genesis chapter 12, when he first said, go to the place that I will tell you. God has continued to encourage him. And I can remember many times where God has continued to keep his promises for Abraham, even if Abraham was kind of oblivious to the reality of what was going on at that time. Well, this week we're going to see a time where Abraham knew what God's promises were. He knew that God was faithful and true, but he acted like he didn't. He acted like he was new at this. And I don't know if you've ever experienced total destruction of a region. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever experienced sulfur coming down and completely wiping out an entire region for 4,000 years. Nothing grows there. But it tends to make the region a little bit less desirable, right? And so in this particular story we're going to look at, Abraham decides he's going to pack up and move away for a while. So look with me at Genesis chapter 20, verse 1. And we're not going to read the whole chapter today, so just bear with me. Genesis chapter 20, verse 1. It says, from there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned in Gerar. So we just saw God destroy the whole region. We just saw Abraham stand up and look at it. Like, Abraham saw what happened. Abraham saw that God fulfilled his promise. And then from there, Abraham decides, well, it kind of stinks now. You know, the wind's blowing. I think I want to go somewhere else. So Abraham left the land that God promised him to go to another foreign land. Abraham tends to do this, right? And it's a land that's not exactly safe. Right, it's a land of the Philistines, which are kind of known for not loving God's people, okay? So he goes to the land of Philistines, and that doesn't seem really smart to start off with. But we've seen this story before. Remember, I told you when this whole thing first happened, when God said, go to the land I will share with you, I will show you. Abraham went to this place in Egypt, and we're going to see the exact same thing that Abraham did then, Abraham is going to do now. And it's kind of messed up, right? Way back then, he went to Egypt right after God told him to leave his home and go somewhere. And you know, here's the thing. In Genesis chapter 12, when God first said, leave your family and go to the place I will show you, maybe Abraham was still kind of learning who God was. Like, maybe Abraham was still trying to figure out, is God going to actually keep his promises or do I have to do things on my own? Like, he's just starting. And so maybe it's understandable what he did, right? But today we're going back with Abraham. And Abraham has seen God's provision for a very long time. And now we're back with Abraham traveling into a new kingdom. But Abraham has already seen the amazing things that can happen. Abraham has seen how God has fulfilled his promise to his nephew Lot. And Abraham has seen how God's provision up to this point has been nothing short of miraculous, right? I mean, Abraham is now filthy rich, essentially, okay? And today we're going to look at Abraham's deception. We're going to look at Abraham's deception, yeah. It's really interesting to see what Abraham is doing here. It's interesting that Abraham has not learned his lesson. It's interesting to see that Abraham has not learned anything, it seems, anything from his previous attempts of handling things on his own and not relying on God, right? It's interesting, but also if we're honest, take yourself out of church for a second and be honest with yourself. Don't think of the, you know, church answer, but if you're honest with yourself, it's kind of understandable because we all do the same thing, right? I mean, we do. We all tend to just trust ourselves, even though we know God's promises are like mentally, I know God's promises are true, but I'm not sure, right? Like maybe my heart is just unsure, and so I do things my own way. That it's kind of like what Abraham is going to do here today, right? But we live in a way, many times, like we're not acknowledging the truth at all. Like we know it's true, but maybe it doesn't apply to us. Maybe it doesn't, maybe God's not that concerned about me. You know, I'm 17 years old and I'm thinking the cops don't care about me. I can just do what I want to do. Maybe we do that sometimes with God. We know the truth of Scripture that God will supply our needs. Like, that's not a question. God will supply our needs. We know that God is working for good in our lives, right? But we still try to handle things on our own, maybe with our families, maybe our jobs, maybe our finances, whatever it is. And here's the thing. I know what you guys are thinking right now. Every single person in this room is probably thinking one of two things. You're thinking either, whew, I'm not the only one that does that. Or you're thinking, I don't do that, to which I say you're lying. You absolutely, every single one of us absolutely does that, right? We absolutely think we can handle it on ourselves. Maybe it's because you think, well, I'm not going to bother God with this thing. Like, this is too small. God's got all of this to do. He doesn't care about this. I'll just handle this one on my own. Maybe that's our thought process. Whatever it is, we decide that we want to handle things on our own. We do the exact same thing that Abraham did. Well, hopefully not the exact same thing. Look at verse 2 in Genesis 20. It says, and Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Back in Genesis 12, Abraham did the exact same thing. That time it was to an Egyptian pharaoh, right? He said, she's my sister, because he was scared, right? And now there's this king named Abimelech, but it's the exact same story. It's the exact same actions. Abraham has told people that his wife is his sister because he doesn't want them to kill him. Which means he's not believing the promises of the Lord, right? Because he hasn't had a kid yet. And the Lord has said, I'm going to give you a kid. So either he's not believing the promises of the Lord, or he's not believing the promises of the Lord. Like, that's the only option here. Abraham tells people that his wife is his sister so that they don't kill him. And that's the gist of what's going on here. Abraham keeps telling the same story. Abraham keeps telling the same lie in order to protect himself. Not to do God's work. Let's be very clear about that. He wasn't doing what God told him to do. He lied in order to protect himself. And he does it for the exact same reason. Later on in verse 11, when Abraham is talking to King Abimelech, here's what Abraham says. Verse 11, it says, Abraham said, I did it because I thought there is no fear of God in at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. That's why he did. If he did it because God told him to do that, then it would have said, I did it because my God told me to tell you this. Instead, it says, I did it because I thought there's no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. He did it because he was scared. That's why Abraham did it. And even in his response, even in that, you can see that Abraham is blaming other people and their lack of belief for his lack of faith. Abraham's shifting, it's not my fault. I did it because you people don't believe in God. It's not my fault. I did it because I didn't think you were going to do the right thing. I'm going to, like, just be honest with yourself. Sometimes we do similar things, right? Abraham's not taking responsibility for his own actions. Let me fill you in what happens here. See, they get into a town and they live there temporarily. That's what sojourn means. Sojourn means you're a foreigner and you're living there temporarily. Okay, and so that's what they do. And they get into town and King Abimelech sees Sarah, sees that she is attractive. She's like 98 years old right now. Just keep that in mind. So older women, hey. They get into town. King Abimelech sees Sarah and sees that she's attractive and desires to have her in his harem. Now, can you just recognize for just a moment how sad this is for Sarah? Like, let's just be honest here for a second. Abraham is a man of God. Abraham birthed a nation. God used Abraham in amazing ways. But if Abraham were alive today, he would totally be canceled. Okay? Like, he sold out his wife twice that we know of, but maybe more. He sold her out. He's essentially abusing her from the beginning, right? Sleeping with his wife's servant so that he can have a kid instead of staying faithful to his wife. Selling her out, saying, hey, no, you're my sister. I don't want to die. We'll let them do things to you instead. Like, that's messed up. Okay, so let's just be aware of what's going on there. But Abraham, this is what Abraham did. Anyway, after Abimelech takes Sarah, the Lord visits Abimelech in a dream. Okay, the Lord comes to Abimelech and he tells Abimelech, you're a dead man. Not just you, but everyone near you is dead if you touch her. Abimelech immediately, he's like, wait a minute. I'm innocent. He said she was his sister. I didn't know that she was somebody else's wife. It's not my fault. I didn't do this. Lord, have mercy on someone for their innocence, please. And the Lord has mercy on Abimelech. And he says, okay, you're right. You didn't know. And so I have kept you from harming her. I have kept you from doing anything. And the Lord has mercy, right? But he also tells them that if anyone harms Sarah, that everyone in his household will pay for that. So Abimelech, he wakes up. Later on, he wakes up in the morning and immediately he calls in to his servants, to his people, and he says, hey, that lady Sarah that we just brought in, nobody touch her or we're all going to die. Old Abimelech was a bit nervous at this point, right? And I think we could absolutely understand that, right? So he sent his servants. He told them what's going on. They're all scared. And by this time, Sarah probably has a security detail around her. Like, she's the president. Secret Service is all around Sarah because they don't want anything to happen. Like, they don't want her to stub her toe just in case. Okay? And so Abimelech returns Sarah. And he says to Abraham, why did you do this to me? Why did you bring this evil? I didn't do anything to you. Why did you do this to me? That's the conversation that Abimelech is having with Abraham. And that's when he told Abimelech that he knew, this is Abraham talking to Abimelech, he knew that there was no fear of God in this place. Listen, King Abimelech, I know that you guys don't fear God. Like, y'all have a bunch of little gods, but you don't fear the one real God. You don't respect, you don't know, you don't believe. And so I was scared. That's what Abraham's telling Abimelech. He went on to share with Abimelech that this has been his plan ever since they left their home. Look at verse 13. It says, "And when God caused me to wander from my father's house," very, very beginning, okay? "When God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her," this is Abraham talking to his wife, Sarah, "I said to her, this is the kindness you must do to me. At every place to which we come, say of me, he is my brother." Okay. It doesn't say, "Hey, on our way over here to this kingdom, I told her to say she was my sister." That's not what it says. Abraham just revealed that this has been a normal practice in their life ever since they left the home that he knew, the home of his father, 25 years ago. For 25 years, every time they come into a new place, Abraham and Sarah have this lie where they say that they're brother and sister, so that way Abraham doesn't have to face potentially death. Now, maybe this is the only two times that it actually happened. Maybe they planned it, but these are the only two times that it actually was needed to be done. Or maybe they did it every time they went somewhere new. We don't know that for sure. What we do know for sure is that this was the plan from the beginning whenever they go somewhere new. At every place to which we come. And even though, for the last 25 years, even though he has been living with these promises from God, he has been watching God fulfill his promises on a very regular basis. Even though he has seen that for 25 years, he's still living with this lie. He's still deciding that he's going to need to rely on his own strength whenever they come into a foreign land. Whenever they come to a new place that maybe doesn't fear God, right? So either they haven't been anywhere else, or this isn't only the second time that this has happened. This is something that's been done multiple times, or at least planned to be done multiple times. Now, just for a moment, I want to ask you to reflect on your own life. As we're thinking about Abraham's deception, I want you to reflect on your own life, because there are some things in your life that you know you're doing and you know they're wrong. Like they exist. You know what they are. I'm not calling you out. I don't know your secret stuff that's going on. But there are some things in your life that you know is wrong and you know will not truly get you to the place that you want to be. Like, you know it's not going to actually move you forward, that you're not actually taking over God's job. As much as you want to, as much as you continue to try to do it on your own, you know that you keep hitting that same brick wall every time. And you can't figure out, why can't I get past that? Maybe it's because it's the same lie that Abraham was telling himself, that you can handle it on your own outside of God's provision. whatever situation you're going through, you know that as long as you rely on your own strength, it never seems to work. But you keep trying, don't you? And listen, this is all of us. This isn't you. This isn't me. This is every single one of us. We all do this, right? I'm going to tell you another story. When I was in like seventh grade-ish, I went on a mission trip. And on this mission trip, we got to go whitewater rafting. I was so excited to go whitewater raft. I used to be a little bit more athletic than I am now, but I was so excited to go whitewater rafting. And we were instructed, you know, we got there. We're at the river. I don't remember what river it was. I think we were in Colorado somewhere, but I don't remember where it was exactly. But we're on the river, and the guide, he's instructing us on things, right? Like, okay, you got to hang on. You got to wear your helmet. I don't remember if we had helmets, actually. I don't think we had helmets. We had a life jacket. This was in the 90s. They didn't care about safety then. So we had a life jacket, and he's telling us, you know, here's what you do. If you fall out, swim back to the boat. If you fall out on the rapids, there's a very specific thing you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to lay on your back, your feet forward, and your arms crossed like this. At least that's in the 90s. That's what they told us. This is what you're supposed to do. That way, as you're coming down, your feet hit the rocks and not your head. We didn't have helmets, so that's what we did. So we are having a blast, and we come around this corner, and I was so proud of myself, y'all. I was not falling off of this raft. My feet were tucked up underneath the thing in front of me. I was holding on to the thing, you know, to the handles really good. And other people are falling off, right? Like the high school kids that were, you know, they were buff. They were falling off, and little tiny seventh grade Billy, I was hanging on. I weighed like 5 pounds, so it was easy to hang on. So anyway, we come around the corner, and the guide says, all right, here's the deal, everybody. Hang on tight. We're coming up to the class 5 rapid, right? And this is the big, I don't know if you know about rapids. Class 5 rapid is like the biggest, baddest rapid, right? And so we're coming up on this class 5 rapid. Everybody hang on tight. And so I'm hanging on tight. And then something happened. And I don't know how long I was in the air. And I don't know exactly what was going on. It felt like a year. But then here's what happened. When I fell, I splatted on a rock. And I was like at the very beginning of this long, rapid succession, right? So I splat on this rock, and I am holding tight because I don't want to die, okay? And that's all that's going through my brain. Like, I'm going to die. And I'm holding on tight, and here's what I said. I'm going to hang on until they come back for me. I don't know if you know anything about rapids. You don't go backwards on rapids, right? But I'm hanging on. I'm like, they can send a helicopter. I don't care. I'm strong enough. I'm hanging on to this. And everybody's yelling at me, right? You got to let go, Billy. You got to let go. You got to write it down. And I'm like, I'm cool. I'm just going to sit here, you know. I can live here. I'm okay. And I'm hanging on to that rock because in my own strength, I can survive. And then I don't know how long I was there. I don't know if it was 5 minutes or 5 days that I was hanging on to this rock. But eventually it clicked in my brain, and I knew I can't do anything here. Right? Like I can't survive. I can't hold on to this thing forever. So I need to just let go and trust the training that I got, right? Like that's what I know I need to do. And on top of that, the guide, he's thrown a rope, right? And so I've got the rope packet thingy, right? Because it's like a big bundle of stuff. And so I've got the rope, and here's what you're supposed to do. I'm supposed to hang on to this rope so that he can pull me in. I'm supposed to lay down on my back with my feet forward. And so that's what I did until I hit the first rock. And then Billy went, boop, splat. And then I'm just, you know, riding down like that. And somehow I survived. That could explain some of my goofiness now. I don't know. But here's the point. Here's the point. I had to come to the realization that I could do nothing on my own. I could not manage on my own. I had to let go of the rock And here's the thing, and I'm just being honest here. That's something that some of you guys need to learn today. You got to let go of the rock. You're hanging on tight, and you're thinking in your own strength you can survive. But here's the problem. In our own strength, we just make it worse, right? In my own strength, hanging on that rock, if I would have just kept on hanging on to that rock, that would have been a lot worse, right? Some of us need to learn that. Here's the really cool thing, though. See, even though Abraham was relying on his own strength and on his own knowledge and on his own everything to save himself and his wife, Sarah, even though he was doing things the way he thought was best, God remembered Abraham. We talked about that last week. We talked about God remembering Abraham, and we remembered that whenever we read that God remembered somebody, it doesn't mean that God forgot them. The actual translation would be closer to God is actively fulfilling his promises to Abraham. God remembered Abraham. So we know that God remembers Abraham. So let's take a look at God's protection here. Who's God going to protect? Well, clearly God protected Abimelech here, right? Like we saw that. God protected Abimelech by going into a dream and warning him. God protected Abimelech's entire family, potentially the entire kingdom, okay? God protected them. God protected Sarah from harm. But why do you think that God wanted to protect Sarah, though? Like, what is it about Sarah that's so special in this? Like, why didn't God just say, fine, do it your way, see what happens? Why did God put, well, because here's the thing. Sarah hasn't had a baby yet, right? And God promised that Sarah was going to have a baby with Abraham. And that hasn't happened yet, which means that God has promised to protect both Abraham and Sarah. And if he didn't protect them, well, then he would be a liar. And we know in Proverbs chapter 30, verse 5, it says, every word of God proves true. He is a shield to those who take refuge in him. We know God is not a liar. So if God promised Abraham and Sarah to have a baby, then they have to have a baby. Like, it's gonna happen, and God's gonna protect Abraham and Sarah at least until that happens. Minimum, until that happens. Because God is not a liar. Well, apparently Abraham forgets that, right? Abraham forgets that, and he continues to try to live in his own strength, and Abraham continues his lie. And so God steps in to protect Abraham, to protect Sarah, and to protect Abimelech, as well as the entire household. Look at verses 14 through 18. It says, then Abimelech, this is God's protection to Abraham, even though Abraham doesn't deserve anything. Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen and male servants and female servants and gave them to Abraham, and returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before you. Dwell where you please. To Sarah, he said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you. In other words, nobody can blame you for doing anything. This proves that you are innocent, that you've done nothing wrong. Okay? So it's a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you. And before everyone, you are vindicated. Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. God continues to protect Abimelech by healing him as well as the women in his house. Now, there's something kind of interesting here, I think. See, Abraham left the place that God gave him. Abraham left the place that God told him to go. We don't read in here, and God told Abraham to leave. We don't read that. Abraham left where God told him to go. It seems to be Abraham's decision. Maybe Abraham didn't want to be reminded about God's judgment because that was a lot of judgment, right? Maybe Abraham just needed a change of scenery, although there was a lot of land he could have had a change of scenery in. But maybe Abraham just needed some fresh air, so he went on a vacation. I don't know why, whatever the reason, Abraham took his story into his own hands, right? Abraham took his promises from God into his own hands. And on top of that, he went to a place. He didn't just go to another place that was empty. He went to a dangerous place where there was no fear of God. And next, the next thing is Abraham takes up his protection himself. Now, remember, Abraham is no weakling. Remember, like, a few weeks ago, we saw how Abraham suited up like Navy SEALs, and him and some guys went on chase and like rescued everyone. Abraham is no weakling, although he's like 100 years old, but he was like 78 or something at that point. So why does he do this? Why is he so scared, knowing that God has provided for him time and time and time again? He decides to take his protection in his own hands, in his own strength, and he lies to the king and about his wife, Sarah. Later, God protected Sarah despite what Abraham did. God protected Sarah from being harmed. That's amazing. Despite the lie, God protected Sarah from being harmed. And on top of that, God used King Abimelech to make Abraham even more rich. Like, that's amazing. God uses King Abimelech to enrich Abraham further as a way of continuing to protect and bless Abraham, continuing to fulfill his promises to Abraham, even while Abraham is in the midst of deceit and trying to do things his own way. Even in the midst of that, even in the midst of Abraham not trusting God, God still blesses Abraham. What about you? You know the situations going on in your life, the struggles, the trials. Do you trust that God has your back? I mean, really, do you trust that God is working in your situation, like actively, actually doing something in your situation? Do you trust that even if you mess up, which you will, do you trust that even if you mess up, that God will continue to fulfill his promises to you? Do you trust that? Do you trust God enough? Listen, do you trust God enough to take that step that you know you need to take? That step you've been hanging off on. You're like, God, I know you want me to do this, but I'm just not sure. I'm not sure how you're going to provide. I'm not sure how you're going to bless. I'm not sure how you're going to, you know, protect. I'm not sure, whatever. So God, I know you want, do you trust God enough to just take that step and see how he's willing to bless you and how God will protect you and continue to fulfill his promises? Or do you need to keep holding on to the rock and waiting for the raft to come back for you? See, the thing is, there are consequences to our actions, right? There are consequences to your faith or your lack of faith. And sometimes those consequences involve more than just you. But here's the thing. Here's the beautiful thing. Even if you're not ready to let go of that rock, even if you don't feel like you can take that step, that doesn't mean that God ignores you or rejects his promises to you. We read that in Deuteronomy 31:8. It says, "It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed." Listen, we can be encouraged by a God. We can be encouraged by a Lord who promises us that all things are going to work together for his good. We can be encouraged by a God who promises us that he will comfort us in his trials, that promises us that he will continue to do the work that he's already started in your life, right? And we can trust the Lord that promises us that he will supply our needs and he will give us that joy, that peace, that understanding that we have no way to explain. And even if I take it upon myself, and even if I decide myself that I'm going to do things my way, we can trust a God who doesn't turn his back on us the way we turn our backs on him, right? These are the promises that Abraham should have relied on. These are the promises that Abraham knew were true because he saw it happen. He saw God fulfill his promises. These are the things that Abraham should have known. But instead, he relied on himself. These are also the promises that you can rely on instead of yourself. What I love about this story is that even though you will mess up, be very clear, you will mess up, I will mess up, even though when you mess up, that you will mess up, God will not ignore the promises that he's made to you. We see that in Abraham, as Abraham ignores God and does things his own way, and God does not forget his promises to Abraham. God remembered Abraham. And God remembers you. Now, if you're here this morning, if you're wondering how to be sure about these promises, if you're joining us online and you're wondering how you can be sure about these promises, because maybe you're questioning, maybe you're just not sure, and you're wondering how you can be sure about these promises, or maybe you're wondering how do you take that next step of faith, whatever that step is, how do you take that next step of faith, maybe to follow Jesus in baptism or to follow Jesus in serving, or if you're having trouble relying on these promises, you know they're true, but you're just having trouble letting go of the rock. If that's you, then I want to encourage you to reach out and let's set up a time to talk about that. Let's set up a time to talk about how your faith and God's promises can actually intersect and what that could mean for you in your life. Listen, it is important that you rely on your relationship with the Lord, not your parents' relationship, not your kids' relationship, not your aunt or your uncle or your friends or whoever else's relationship, but your relationship with the Lord. And if you don't have a relationship with the Lord, then don't wait. Grab your phone and reach out today, right now. Say, I want to learn what it means to have a relationship with the Lord. And listen, I don't care if you've been in church for 50 years. Just because you go to church doesn't mean you have a relationship with the Lord. So it doesn't matter who you are or how old you are or how long you've been around. If you know that you're struggling with your relationship with the Lord, then grab your phone, send a text, send a call, send smoke signals. I don't care, but get a message out there and let's have a conversation about your relationship with the Lord. Let's pray. Father God, God, we don't deserve your faithfulness. We turn our backs on you and we ignore you and we do our own thing so regularly, God. We don't deserve your promises. But God, you never fail to keep your promises. We deserve you to walk away the way that we walk away, God. But you never fail to stay right there with us, holding us up. While we're kicking and screaming sometimes, but you're holding us up. And so, God, I thank you for that. God, I ask this morning that if there's anyone here, if there's anyone online, that is beginning to struggle or question or wonder about their relationship with you, that, Lord, you would encourage them to know that your love never fails and that you will never leave or forsake, and God, that we can rely on your promises and